You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today's guest is Claire Gardner. During Edgar Cayce's lifetime, the records of the readings were his personal property. After his death, they became the property of his sons, Hugh Lynn Cayce and Edgar Evans Cayce, and his secretary, Gladys Davis Turner. They were stored in the Cayce home and office. In February 1948, the Edgar Cayce Foundation, or ECF, was chartered by the Commonwealth of Virginia to provide sole permanent legal and physical custody of historical resources, including the original records and correspondence, business papers, appointment books, photographs, and recorded lectures. A number of donated items in the vault include a mummy's hand and gemstone collection. The Edgar Cayce readings are copyrighted by the Edgar Cayce Foundation, solely responsible for granting permission to use the materials. Claire Gardner is the archive coordinator.
Thank you for coming on the show today.
It's my pleasure.
How did you learn about Edgar Cayce?
Well, really, when I was a teenager, way back in New Hampshire, I heard a little bit about it through the Searchlight that was coming through. Occasionally, I'd read that and found it very interesting. But I was told to stay away from it, and so I did. Later on, I moved to California and ended up with a roommate who just loved Edgar Cayce and had a shelf of many of his books, and I read every one of them. That was in California. And then ending up here was a total surprise to me. But as I passed the ARE building itself, I remembered everything that I had read, and that was when I came in to volunteer.
How long have you actually worked for the ARE?
I started in 2006 as a volunteer, and it was about 3 years as volunteer work, and then I became, well, you can say part-time in the archives and part-time in other departments, some full-time.
So then you'd heard about the ARE a few years before you started volunteering.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Could you tell us, what is the Edgar Cayce Foundation?
Well, simply said, we're the keepers of the Edgar Cayce readings.
I know that you have in the library copies of the readings, so then y'all take care of the actual originals.
Well, the people who actually received the readings got the originals. We had the first copy that was left with the vault, the archives. And there's over 14,306 of them tucked away neatly in our cabinets. And if I were to give you a brief explanation of, I guess, how the Edgar Cayce Foundation came about.
Oh, yes.
I'd have to say it began in February 1931. When the door to the Edgar Cayce Hospital closed. And the window to the ARE began, just as a thought form. Edgar Cayce wrote a letter to all those who had stood by him through the years before the hospital closed, those who had been active or shown any interest in his work, from his oldest contacts to the newest. And he called for kind of an organization meeting to decide whether or not the work should continue. He was leaving up to his friends and family whether there should be an organization at all or whether or not they should all give up the work entirely. And, of course, needless to say, the group of over 60 people that were gathered would not even hear of it. So a very broad charter was applied for and granted. And the ARE received its certificate of incorporation on July 7th, 1931. Then they wanted to make sure that the same thing wouldn't happen to the ARE as what happened to the ANI. So they wanted to make sure the organization would survive. Their concern was to keep the ARE alive, to protect Edgar Cayce and his work. And so some of the board members discussed the need for setting up an Edgar Cayce Foundation to assure the continuance. An investment counselor from New York City advised the forming of a separate organization whose primary purpose would be to preserve the readings and their integrity, to have custody and make them available in a proper way to qualified organizations and individuals, primarily through the research of the ARE membership organization. And then they made a motion. It was seconded, unanimously passed, and that's how the Edgar Cayce Foundation came into being. We already had a publishing company, so when Hugh Lynn explained this to the members, he said, I like to think of these three, the association, the publishing company, and the Edgar Cayce Foundation, as the mind, body, and soul. And the three became one. Isn't that a lovely little story?
Oh, yes. Wow. So then the foundation doesn't just guard the physical readings, they guard the rights to the readings.
Exactly. That's exactly what they do.
So then you get requests from people who want to write books, perhaps, and use the readings in them?
Exactly. What I do is I answer any questions that people want to know about Edgar Cayce or his family. I do the research through the readings that we have. And if anyone wants to write a book and they want to quote Edgar Cayce, well, since we do have the readings, I verify their quotations with the readings and give them permission. Those are the guidelines we use.
What do you check when you're checking just to verify those readings that they're quoting? Do you go into the vault and pull that volume, or do you use an electronic resource?
Well, we have both. We have the electronic source, but since I'm the keeper of the vault, I feel much more comfortable going to the actual readings, the physical copies, because occasionally there have been errors found in the electronical readings. And I
work
on that, too. When someone finds an error, well, it's up to me to verify it with the actual readings and then correct the error.
So you maintain the integrity of the readings, pretty much.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
When it comes to the readings, you mentioned the originals. Did Gladys Davis write those by hand as he was giving them and then type them up, or was she typing them as he was giving the readings?
She took shorthand long before she ever met Edgar Cayce. As a business, that's what she wanted to do, is enter the business world. And so she took shorthand. The shorthand is what really proved to be beneficial. That's how she took down each of the readings. Then when the readings were over, she would go into a separate room and type out everything, and she would send the typed out original to the member, the person who had just had a reading, and keep a copy for the organization.
Do you still have the shorthand notes?
We had many, many of her shorthand books, and somehow they were mostly all discarded. We managed to keep one full shorthand book, including the copy, a little manual of which shorthand, because there are different types of shorthand, I guess. And we have a copy of the one that she studied from.
Wow. Well, that's neat. Goodness.
Yes.
In addition to verifying the readings with other sources or people who are using the readings, what do you do as an archive coordinator?
Well, I kind of explained that we answer all questions based on the family, those I can answer because I can do the research on. But sometimes books are written by outside authors, and they just use paraphrases or suggest that someone who was a friend of Edgar Cayce is in there. And I can't verify the books that are written by outside authors. I can only verify the Edgar Cayce information that we have contained in the vault.
Can you describe the vault for our listeners?
Well, it's my little peaceful place, my serene. I go in there and I just understand it. It has extraordinary stories of many ordinary people who just came here before me. The idea was they were just trying to make a better life for themselves. They didn't know, for instance, the study group people, they didn't know they were writing a book. They were ordinary people just trying to ask questions and make their life simpler. And through the readings, the book was A Search for God, and it's become a bestseller. That's where the study groups usually base their original, all of the study groups base their original studies on.
It's a peaceful place.
Oh.
And I guess you can get a sense of, I don't know, it can be a nice place for meditation for you.
It could be. It's a very small room, and it's kind of jam-packed with, through the years, boxes of memorabilia that people have donated to us, and for lack of a better place to put them, they end up in the vault. I would say the vault is about a 6 by 10 room.
We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Claire Gardner.
I would say the vault is about a 6 by 10 room. And what doesn't fit there, we have a secondary location on the third floor in the visitor center, and even a spill out into a locked area of the library. So we're kind of bursting at the seams.
Okay, I was wondering because I took a tour of the vault. It wasn't too long, but it was a couple of years ago. And I was wondering where all the readings are, you know, those copies. So it's not all in that one vault on is it the second floor or where is that?
We're on the second floor, not far from the library. And yes, all the readings that we do have, all 14,000 plus of them, are there in the vault, in the cabinets. And some people had more than one reading, so there's quite a few. The other items that come in were possibly donations from the family members of Edgar Cayce's close relations or his study group members or the people who were with him through thick and thin at the very beginning. When they pass, their family, if they think of us, give us the memorabilia that they have tucked away. And we don't want to discard that, so sooner or later we go through that and find a place for it, a loving home somewhere in the organization.
The Visitor Center was built, was that in the 70s?
73 through 5.
So then where was the vault before then?
The hospital. The hospital on the hill.
Oh, yes. I was trying to figure out where they would put it in there.
Right, really. They were on the second floor. I mean, on the ground floor.
Okay, wow.
Much smaller, naturally, but it contained the readings. And before that, it was at Edgar Cayce's home on Arctic Circle, and he had built a small extension to his house to house all the readings. If you read one of the many books, I think one by Harmon Brough, A Seer Out of Season. He describes when he first came to work for Mr. Cayce, the readings were kind of lined up along the floor in the kitchen and into the hall and into the living room. And that's why he decided to build a little extension to the house and give them a permanent place.
Wow. And that's amazing that they've been maintained, you know, after moving from place to place, you know, without any damage.
I know. Well, you know, they've had a little bit of damage, but as very little as we can. They were just meant to be. They were meant to continue. That's the way I look at it.
Well, what is the strangest thing you've seen in the vault?
The strangest thing. I'd have to say a mummy's hand. Yes.
And which mummy's hand was that? Where did it come from?
It came from the Chicago World's Fair. 1893, I believe, and it was simply part of the World's Fair, had nothing to do with the Cayce Foundation, and I guess it was on display by doctors, you know, in the fair. After the fair was torn down, they were moving some of the items there, and a hand broke off. And it was gathered and placed in a box. And a member saw it and asked for it and donated it to Edgar Casey.
Wow.
So that's what we have. It was tucked away in the vault where you really couldn't see it in its own little box. And one day, as I was searching around and trying to do some indexing, I saw this box that I had to, from a ladder, stretch to reach for it. And as I did, the cover popped open, and there was the hand. So I guess with a little scream from me, not expecting a mummy's hand, it's still there.
That's a testament that y'all really do keep and maintain what people donate.
Yes, actually we do. We try to find the best possible use for it.
And I was wondering, you mentioned it's a peaceful atmosphere. Are there any spirits or stories of spirits haunting the vault?
Well, I hate to say haunting, but yes, at the risk of having the men in white coats come and get me.
Oh, goodness.
There are no, I don't feel, thank God I feel that way, I don't feel there are any negative spirits there, just some mischievous ones occasionally, and others that are just so helpful. Many times, especially at the beginning, when I walk in to answer a question that someone has asked me and I haven't got the faintest idea of where I'm going to get an answer like that, I just stand there and start wondering and reach out and grab a drawer and pull it open. And on more than one occasion, that's the right drawer to open the information that I needed. So I know I'm being guided. Spirits
wow.
are definitely there.
Well, do you have a favorite item in the vault?
Actually, yes. I'd like to say that the picture of Gladys when she was honored at the Cavalier Club for her 60th anniversary, she's got a long white flowing gown. That picture, the original, is actually in the Gladys Davis room on the second floor. But Larry Van Hoos took the picture, copied it, and he airbrushed it for that room to update it, make it look pretty. And in doing so, he found a flaw in his first airbrushing. And he was going to discard it, but he was thinking of that out loud, and I heard him, and I said, could I please have it? So he gave it to me, and I put that in the vault, and that's who greets me as I open the door. She's facing me. Gladys is still the keeper.
Well, now you mentioned still the keeper. Was she in charge of the vault until she passed away?
Yes, she was. She did have, you know, volunteers, but the vault was never opened to anyone but her, and only when she was there. And the volunteers would come and go only as she knew they were there. So that's still the way it is. We have only a couple of us that have the keys to the vault, and volunteers do help us out, but only if one of us are with them at all times.
Speaking of Gladys Davis, I understand that you recently rediscovered some missing memoirs that were written by Gladys Davis just after the death of Mr. Casey.
The diary letters.
I believe so. How did that come about?
Well, that's pretty exciting. That kind of made my day. It has made my year, really. As I mentioned earlier, when people donate items from many years ago, we keep everything. We store the boxes in the vault or wherever we can and then go through them later. When I was first here in 2006, I was helping out rearrange items in the vault, and I came across one of the boxes that contained diary letters. And in order to index them on the outside of the box to make sure we had them then listed to the computer, I read them, and there were four, only for the month of April 1945. But one of the four mentioned a letter that was supposed to have been written in March. So I inquired about it, and my predecessors told me there's actually 3.5 years worth of diary letters written by Gladys weekly to 10 days for 3.5 years, and he told me if they're not there, they're around somewhere. So every time I did any research work, I always continued to look for them. And then one of the boxes that had come through just 2 years ago had actually the diary letters in there, the full amount. I was beside myself. So they were written, they were typed out by Gladys on whatever paper she could come. This was during the war years, and paper was scarce. And so they're very difficult to read. So I scanned them to put them online. It's an in-house research, electronics only. And I had all the weekly, I think I'm missing one, but otherwise I had all the weekly for 3.5 years.
Hmm.
Very excited about that. I brought it to the attention of a few other people, and they weren't as impressed as I was at the time, but, you know, that just goes to show that all in its due time. And so obviously it's come to its time, because now people are inquiring about them.
What is included with them, and can you share an example?
Well, the reason I was excited about them is it contained 3 years right after Edgar Cayce has passed, and even though I know a lot of books have been written about details of what happened, her particular diary letters is the emotional part that we really don't hear about. And her first letter, if I can read the first chapter.
Oh, yes.
Was on January 16th, 1945. Now, Edgar Cayce passed away January 3rd. So January, this is 13 days, and she's still, well, in shock, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So she sat herself down at 11 o'clock in the evening and wrote a letter, a diary, in her own diary, to Edgar Cayce. And it starts off, "Dear Eddie Cayce, Muddy and I," now for the listening audience, Muddy was the pet name for Gertrude. So she's saying, "Muddy and I have been trying so hard to get at that first letter to Hugh Lynn. In fact, I've been trying so hard to get at anything. It just seems like the bottom has dropped out of me when you went away. Somehow I couldn't become sufficiently stabilized within myself to settle on any particular job and get it done. So Sunday night I got out all my readings and studied them from beginning to end, and finally began to feel myself settling into peaceful place. Around 2 o'clock I went to bed saying my prayers, believing, as my readings had repeatedly said, that God could and would answer."
We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Let's continue our conversation with Claire Gardner.
Now, this letter is 13, and that's just the beginning of the letter, and that's 13 days after Edgar Cayce had passed, and she and Muddy still hadn't gotten around to telling Hugh Lynn Cayce or Edgar Evans that their father had passed. Now, they were both in the service. So it's from that point on, you know, and then, of course, in April when Gertrude passed, it's just chock full of emotional drama that went on, where the people who loved and were friends or family of Edgar had to pull together to keep going what we now have.
Wow. So it's the emotional story behind the readings or that occurred right after that. That's pretty amazing.
It's, well, when you think that she wrote these letters for 3.5 years, the first letter, she absolutely did not intend to share it. But in speaking with one of the family members, she told them about it, and they said, "Oh, please share it with us. You know, we're all hurting." And so she did that, and she was encouraged to continue to kind of let people know the updated items of what's going on with Gertrude, who's still alive for a little while, and then Hugh Lynn when he came in, and the organizations hadn't really fully come together yet. So they were just all holding it together until the men came home.
Well, now, are these going to be published somewhere?
Well, because suddenly there's an interest in them, we have had a few people look at them, and we're going to use them right now for research. And we're not sure exactly what's going to be done, whether they're published as an in-house for members only or published in a book. I can't begin to tell you that. It's still brand new.
Maybe venture inward, or at least excerpts.
Oh, that would keep venture inward going for a long time.
Oh, yes. Wow. Well, that's neat. It's that much material. That's great. Do you ever get calls from people who have had readings?
Well, when you think of it, they would have had to be children because Edgar Cayce passed in 1945. So it's really rare. Most of the calls I do get are from family members. Like last week, I got a call from a granddaughter, and I love it when I can find one for them. But unfortunately, I had to disappoint her and say that no, her grandfather didn't get a reading. Now, unfortunately, all of the readings were not all kept all of the time, and some were damaged in fires. Not many, but sometimes that's the ones that are being requested by members. And after Edgar Cayce passed, a few other people came in and were trying to give readings, and they're confusing the readings they might have had by other people. And because they weren't Edgar Cayce, we did not keep those.
Wait, so then other people were giving readings?
Well, they attempted to. Hugh Lynn was looking to find someone who possibly could be a psychic like his father, but there was only one Edgar Cayce.
Wow.
The others just didn't measure up.
With tours of the vault, are those regular things, or is that just something that's a special thing that you know, most people usually don't get?
Most people usually don't get. You're right there. It used to be allowed when there was more room in the vault, and now we are just elbow to elbow, and it just is not possible. But the good news is we're part of the construction that's going on. One of the buildings that's been added on to the Wynn building, they've decided that the Edgar Cayce Foundation should take up the ground floor.
Wow.
And so we are moving to the ground floor. It's three times the size of what we are now, and we'll be able to take all of the items from the vault and from the third floor room that we have locked, and the library, and wherever else we've got items tucked away, and bring it all to one location. It'll take a while before we put everything make some sense out of everything, but yes, we expect to be able to give tours again.
So then, will that be, that's not just going to be the ground floor, it's also going to be a vault as well, right? Like it currently is.
Right. The ground floor will be mostly the vault, and then adjacent to a small office.
It'll be just like it is now. It's fireproof. And
absolutely.
Is it temperature controlled, the current one and the future one?
Yes. The current one is temperature controlled. The future one will be even safer. It'll be temperature controlled and better, I guess, for fire protection. We thought that the one we have now was perfectly, and I guess for those days it was good fire protection. But they built the meditation room and patio above us. And through the years, unfortunately, with the rain, there's a little bit of moisture that is beginning to seep through. So we wouldn't want that to damage the contents of the vault. We actually do need to move.
Well, that's amazing. So it'll have a new home.
Home.
Speaking of, like, temperature control, how are the original readings, or how are the readings that you have stored preserved? Do you have special paper over them? I mean, if you look through them, do you use gloves?
Yes, we use gloves. But the special paper, Gladys and all of the people of those days were not using any special paper. So whatever paper was being typed on is what we have in there. Naturally, we use the temperature controlled, we use gloves, the paper is aging, we have to be very careful to preserve the fraying edges. So I'm glad that some time ago they were all electronically scanned. They're on microfiche in another building. We have them in different locations, but the vault is what has the original copies.
Okay, I was wondering, I knew they were typed in, I guess in the 80s, they were typed into an electronic database. So they're also scanned and on microfiche.
Yes.
Wow.
In a different location. So God forbid anything should ever happen to this particular location. The other one has the duplicates on microfiche.
That's great. Now, there's also some things that I noticed when I was touring the vault. You had some Edgar Casey, you had some devices. Like the Oroscope.
We have a couple of Oroscopes. They don't really work, and that's the problem. These were the beginnings. These were the originals, and the people who created them were asking Edgar Casey what's wrong with them. And in trance, he was giving them some readings that would help, but nothing ever really came to be an horoscope that one could use. However, I've had a few people who come in and they use the horoscope, focusing on another person, and they claim they can see colors. So I guess it's a combination of who you are, how much time you have, how spiritual of a person you tend to be, and the person that you're focusing on. Edgar Casey could see the auras without the use of an horoscope. So we're not that sensitive.
And I was wondering, you have devices in there, and I noticed you had a chair. I don't know if you moved it out. I think it was from Gladys Davis's desk, perhaps?
A little green chair?
I'm colorblind. It was wooden.
Okay. Yeah, well, yeah, there you go. You're talking about 1940s. They were all wooden.
Yeah, that's true.
We have two. One is still in the vault, a little green chair. And then we have one on rollers, also wooden, that was Gladys's. So we do have both of them. I don't know if there was a third. In some of the pictures that we're looking at, next to Edgar Casey's, the table that she used, it was an upright chair that we don't have that one. So I believe there was a third chair.
Is the foundation in charge of all the artifacts, like Edgar Casey's couch, even if they're not in the vault?
Yes.
Okay, I see.
And the couch is not in the vault because it doesn't fit. But when we move to the new location, it will fit, and that's one of our claims right away that's coming with us.
Ah, that's good. So it will no longer be is that Gladys Davis room?
Right.
But people will still be able to see it since they'll be able to tour the vault.
Oh, they'll be able to see it. Yes.
That's great. Now, is there anything else you want the listeners to know?
You know, let me backtrack on that. You were asking about the couch. That's going to stay in the Gladys Davis room.
Okay.
When you asked about the couch, I was thinking of the desk that was Edgar Casey's desk that we recently moved in there.
We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with Claire Gardner.
When you asked about the couch, I was thinking of the desk that was Edgar Casey's desk that we recently moved in there in the Gladys Davis room. And it's the desk that's coming with us.
Okay, and I was wondering, is that the desk that's covered with plexiglass or glass?
Yes.
I see. Wow, so that's Edgar Casey's desk. That's pretty amazing.
Edgar Cayce's desk, and we have pictures of him using that desk and photographs all around it. And we're hoping eventually, when we do move that desk to the new location, to recreate the photos that are around that desk and as kind of like a museum area.
Wow, that'll be amazing. Well, now, is there anything else you want the listeners to know?
No, just pretty much the fact that when you think you've seen it all or done it all, hold on to the window and the door. When a door closes, a window opens. When I left California, I thought I was retiring. And I come here, and there's all this wonderful stuff for me. So, Edgar Cayce, the foundation will continue. I'm only one small part of it, and there's a whole open door, open window for anybody who comes after me. I'm hoping that I can share, leave for them something they can pick up and carry forward. This is a wonderful organization, and I love being here.
Well, thank you for all this information, and thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Now it's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose, who has a new CD out titled Developing Your Intuition. She also has a new class about spiritual frequency that helps people to move into the moment. You can find out more at kimmyrose.com. That's KimmyRose.com. Well, hello.
Hi.
What's today's Thought for the Day?
I love this one. It's so wonderful. It's 1537-1. But if ye are attempting to have the physical body doing just as it pleases, thy mental body controlled by what will other people say, and thy spiritual body and mind shelved only for good occasions and for good impressions that you make occasionally, there cannot be other than confusion.
Wow.
And I'm smiling because it's like, yeah, I'm going to go there. This is something that if I don't go there, people will talk about me, or there's such thing as being considerate and caring. But how many times do you feel like if you don't do something, there will be a judgment? But the truth is, if you really do, if you really, really do go there and you're not really wanting to be present there, you're not giving the intention and attention to that moment that you're in. So you're just going to get a bunch of confusion. So I say to my kids, you know, I would rather you be here when you really want to be here and then you're present and I can, you know, enjoy, you know, that larger percentage of your presence than if you feel like you have to. And that's not out of guilt. It's just simply saying, I honor that sacred time that you have with your presence rather than not, or just feeling like you got to go and then you got to run to the next place. And you shelve away that part. And then you think only for the good impressions and good occasions. And you don't even know why you're in places. And you start choosing places out of guilt and obligation when the truth is you have a choice. Always.
Oh, yes. Wow. And I think it's interesting. It has these three different positions, or the physical body doing just as it pleases, and the mental body worried about other people or what they would say, their views, and the spiritual body only occasionally awakening, I should say. And it's interesting. That describes the state of a lot of us
because, you know, a lot of times, I know the physical body, you know, some of us, you know, we want chocolate milk, so we drink a whole bunch of it. And that conflicts with our mind that, you know, worries about our waistline. And then our spiritual body, I think that's interesting. I know a lot of people from different religions maybe experience this, but there's something called Sunday Christians that might be derogatory, but it can be it's a mindset where on Sunday you're spiritually doing what's right or seeking that, or at least acting that way, but the rest of the week you're not reflecting it. So it shows that, a lot of us can have all this conflict going on, and, you know, what's the answer? That's something we have to seek.
And there's that presence. If you're just showing up, you're not really there. You're shelving yourself. You are shelving. I agree with you. I mean, it's better to just sit if you want to pray. I mean, like, to me, community is everything, and being with other people and sharing. And you can, you know, they did the study. It was this professor did a study about the Boston, the Red Sox, and how when they're at a baseball game, the vibration of community just rises when they sing the song Sweet Caroline. And then how it kind of drops when it drops off. It's like being, you know, going to church and being there is about really being there. If you're, why even go? Because you can sit at home and pray and connect with God, but you go there to raise up your frequency and your vibration. So then choose a place that you can get excited about going to. But teach that to our children at a very young age. These tribal patterns that happen in our families.
Well, thanks for doing the thought for the day.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks to Claire Gardner for talking to us about the archive. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce.